Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. It's a couple of days late, but we've lived a bit of a life this week, so we thought we'd just do this a little bit later. I'm Kenny McIntosh. It's episode 229 if you're following along with us on the network, and I'm joined by Sondra. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. I feel a little bit better about Retro Raw this week, and I wonder if you can guess why.
Is it because, and I'm so, because I knew this was coming, so I was like, she thinks it's so bad, and her favourite tag team are going to dethrone her unfavourite tag team. It's going to be great. Is that maybe why you're happy?
That's why I'm happy. And I don't know that LOD are my favourite tag team, but they're not the fucking Godwins. On Retro Raw, well, I started to really like the Headbangers, though, and I still Owen and Bulldog quite a bit. So, like, I don't know if I would call LOD my favourite tag team.
I mean, Owen and Bulldog aren't really a tag team anymore.
Well, they're not, but I still kind of think, well, they haven't exactly, like, broken up as a tag team. They just haven't been fighting together recently, but I still think of them as a tag team. But regardless, you know who they're not? The fucking Godwins, who are not the tag team champions anymore, and I'm so happy about it, because fuck the Godwins. It's a better day in 1997.
It's a better day. I knew you would be over fucking, imagine how overjoyed I was. In 1997, when I got to see finally the LOD lifting the championships. So we're going to start a new thing on Retro Raw, where at the beginning of each show, I'm going to sort of like go through what happens on the shotgun Saturday night tapings that take place before this Raw goes on air. And these would be this would basically be the episode that follows this. Just because sometimes stuff happens or whatever, so we find out on this episode of Retro Raw that Billy Gunn and Jesse James got together on the October 11th episode of Shotgun Saturday Night, and on the October 18th episode, which was taped before this Raw, they have their first tag team match together, where it is where Billy Gunn is dressed like Rockabilly, but he's called Badass Billy Gunn and Road Dog Jesse James. That's what they're now going by. They have a match against the New Blackjacks, and in the end, Jesse James does the old Bobby Heenan WrestleMania 5 Rick Rude leg spot, so Billy Gunn can get the pin, and Jesse James grabs the mic after the match and says, you know, if you guys think that was good, you've not seen anything yet, wait till you see what we do next, or whatever, and cutting a bit of a heel promo.
Almost like a new age is dawning for these two.
Oh, these two outlaws, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So they're clearly becoming a team, and on the road to becoming what we would know them as in the future. So that takes place on Shotgun. We also have Mark Merrow defeating a jobber. We have the Headbangers defeating the Hardy Boys, which is just an
odd
match.
That sounds fun. Like, I'm not going to watch it, but it sounds like fun.
And then in the main event, we have Dude Love defeating the Sultan. So, just in case you wonder, Sondra, your heroes are still around. They're just not on Raw.
They're just not on the show that I'm actually watching. Got it.
And I am not adding their second Retro Show to my library.
Nope. No, nor am I. Nope. I want to see the Headbangers. I love the Headbangers now, but I am just not going to watch Shotgun Saturday Night. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
We're only 2 years, we're less than 2 years away, folks, from when Sondra makes that agonizing decision of, does she do SmackDown, or do I give it to someone else and she'll go in a huff because somebody else gets to do it?
You keep reminding me of this. I like to not think about the fact that I have to make that decision.
We all know what decision you're going to make. But anyway,
I hate that you're right.
You can pretend if you like.
I'm in denial. Let me be in denial for a little while, okay?
Be in denial. So we open up the show with a video package with the Legion of Doom. They're doing a sit-down interview. Animal's wearing an Austin 316 t-shirt. Very random.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, they've not got the face paint on. They're talking about, you know, they need to win the belts, blah, 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 blah. And the thing is, LOD tonight are going for the tag team titles, and if they don't win the titles, they will have to retire. Will they win the belts? Will they go away and get repackaged? Now, I'm curious, when you were watching this opening video package, did you know it was going to happen?
I didn't know. I had an idea of what should happen. I had a guess of what would happen, which is what I thought should happen, because I was like, I don't think they leave the company at this point. But I realized that I wasn't sure, because I haven't listened to reviews like beyond the Monday Night Raw after Pillman died, the one that we did last week, is when I stopped listening to current episodes of New Generation Project because of spoilers. And so now I just kind of listen to them on a delayed schedule as we go along, right? And so, like, beyond that point, it's kind of the great unknown for me. Like, I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. And I was worried. I was worried, Kenny. I didn't know if LOD were going to leave and go to WCW or something. And so when they did this intro, I didn't even remember. Did they announce that it was LOD putting their careers on the line last week? Did I just miss that?
No, they actually didn't announce it. They didn't pre-plan it. So, you know, this was obviously kind of a ratings ploy, right? Because, you know, they can say, you know, LOD have to retire if they don't win. So that's an impetus for you to try and watch the show and not turn over to Nitro and...
Right, because they say in the intro, they're like, they vowed to win the tag titles or retire. And I was just like, say what? Say what? They're going to... No, 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 no. No, no, no,
Can
no,
you
no,
imagine
no, no, no.
How you would feel about the Godwins if they had retired the Legion of Doom?
I would be so fucking angry. Like, the rage would be real. The rage is already real that they beat the Headbangers. I mean, if they retired Legion of Doom and took away my Hawk promos, oh boy. Oh boy. It wouldn't be good. I was just like, they had better fucking win because the Godwins, no, just no.
So we open the show with Vince McMahon in the ring and the Hart Foundation coming out for an interview. Davey Boy Smith is not there because he's celebrating an anniversary and a birthday. I thought it was very interesting. I don't know if you picked up on this, what Vince said about Brett when he was coming out. Vince said, he claims to be the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Like, just a little bit of shade being thrown by old Vince again.
I didn't catch it enough to write it down, but it definitely seems like, and I think we had it last week with JR saying that Brett needed to prove himself too, right? It seems like there are all these little digs at Brett from commentary. And then later when Sean says stuff about, you know, Bret Hart putting a sleeper hold on this crowd and da 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 da, like, obviously Sean's going to take those digs, but it doesn't seem like commentary is supporting Brett in this role. And Brett feels like the babyface in this feud because Sean is such a despicable prick, right? Like, they're still trying to show Brett as a heel in America, and it's just not working at all. Like, nothing about this dynamic really makes any sense.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing that's interesting is they're very clearly, in this kind of last month, they're not really pitching that the Hart Foundation are anti-American anymore. Because the Hart Foundation are not talking about it.
You know, no, they're not.
So they are basically the babyfaces now. That's how you're supposed to feel about it. So before Brett can even get a word out, Hunter and Sean and Rick Rude and China are all backstage, and you know they talk about what happened last week with Sean. You know, they show clips of Sean with the Canadian flag up his nose.
Because nobody knows Canada like he knows Canada. Ha 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 ha.
It's always baffling to me that 18 to 35 year old males got into wrestling around this time. Maybe because the juvenile humor of Shawn Michaels became something that they enjoyed. But it is funny to me, like, I remember at the time I would have probably enjoyed this kind of stuff, and now I'm just like, oh, fuck off, Shawn Michaels.
He's just insufferable.
He is insufferable. Thankfully, you know, casket match injury, but anyway. plus, admit he came back and had a great run for 8 years in 2002.
Which is a good thing.
The biggest compliment I can give Shawn Michaels is if he had not come back in 2002, I think there's various times that I would have checked out of watching. He's that good in his second run. But
it's a while till we get there. And right now I am deeply embedded in 1997 and he's a prick and can go away.
You've not got that long to go.
I know.
So he does...
The light at the end of the tunnel.
Shows the Canadian flag thing, Hunter beating Brett and all that sort of stuff. And Brett says, you know, I've had enough of you, you know, and challenges him to a fight. And Sean says he would take up his challenge, but last time they faced at WrestleMania 12, he beat him. And then, there's bits as well where, like, Sean, says that Brett's getting old, he's jerking the curtain, and all this sort of stuff. He's already beaten the whole Hart Foundation anyway, so what's the point in coming out there now? Hunter Hearst Helper, Triple H doesn't want to do it either because he beat Brett last week, because apparently count is really what matters.
And he goes, I'm younger than you, I'm better than you, and I'm certainly bigger than you in more ways than one, because he's referencing his penis.
He is. Shawn Michaels is hung, is the message here.
Or Triple H, apparently.
Yes, Triple H, so, well... Anyway, I'm not really going to go there. But
so he says.
They're trying to get over the DX name. Are they D-Generation X? You know, Generation X. Are they D-Generation X?
Yeah, because Brett calls them degenerates, and so Sean says, you know, you say we're degenerates, and he's tired of Generation X for some reason. They're D-Generation X. I'm like, great, it's official.
Now, when I was younger, I'd never heard of Generation X. I didn't know what that was. No, what is Generation X?
It's like, I forget the actual years. It's the generation before us, essentially. Like, from, I don't know exactly when it's supposed to be, but it would have been people who are like young adults at this time.
Okay. And then Brett's in the ring saying that he doesn't think that those two are going to make it to Survivor Series. And then he starts to leave when the Nation of Domination come down because Kama has a match now against Owen Hart. It's non-title because obviously why would Kama and Mustafa ever have a title shot? Because he is terrible at this point. I always laugh with Kama because I'm just like, he should, whoever made him the Godfather later on, he should pay them money. Because, like, whew. Anyway, so we have a match with Owen Hart and Kama and Mustafa. We were talking to James Dixon on the podcast last week. They clearly are aiming towards Hart Foundation versus Nation of Domination, right? You can clearly see it happening. That's where it's going.
It seems that way. I mean, it really seems that way quite a lot.
We've got DX on commentary. They come out. They're being so obnoxious. They're sitting in front of the commentary table. They grab JR and Vince's headsets. They're eating bananas.
Yeah, so they steal Vince and JR's headsets, which means that Lawler is still allowed to speak.
But what's great about it, to be fair, as much as DX are obnoxious, like, Lawler is, like, sucking up to DX so much. And he's like, you know, we could be the new greatest commentary team ever. Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and Jerry the King Lawler. And then, like, they'd basically go, do you really think we're on your side? And, like, and it's because it's so clever, right? Because why would these two young guys who feel that they have been, you know, burned by Generation X or the old guard or whatever, why would they be wanting Jerry Lawler on their side? And, you know, like Sean says, you know, I remember working for you when I was younger and all that sort of stuff. And then, like, you know, Lawler's just like, well, you know, should I just get my headset to China? Can China talk? And then Hunter says she'd make more sense than you.
My favorite part about that is Lawler trying to give his headset to China, and she just looks at him like he is the piece of filth that he is and swats at him. And I was like, good for China.
Yep, and then Rick Rude gets Lawler's headset, says nothing, really.
Because Rick Rude is useless. Why is he there?
I don't remember him being this terrible, but he is just completely
But he's bad, right? Yet. It's not just me.
No,
I mean,
he is.
I guess
he
he's not even, like, it's not that he's bad and ruining it. It's just he seems very useless. He's like, you know, Percy Watson or David Otunga on commentary. It's just like, why are you there?
Do you know what he's like? It's like, see if you're going to make some chicken, right? And you go, I want to put some seasoning on my chicken to give it a little bit of taste.
And the you use parsley?
The seasoning doesn't do anything. It doesn't add anything. So you go, oh, what's the point in that?
Rick Rude is the parsley of the World Wrestling Federation.
I do enjoy his turd-colored suits, though. I mean, I just don't understand why he's chosen
them.
They
always look like a shit.
Yep, every time. And it's ironic, because, you know. Anyway.
Or fitting.
He used to be really good. The match is really nothing. It's all really about the commentary.
They don't even show half of the match, because they're too busy showing Sean and Hunter eating bananas on the commentary table. Like, I mean, it's Owen Hart versus Kama Mustafa, so the wrestling's not bad. It's just inconsequential.
Exactly. And then Sean's on the announce table, crotch-chopping Bret Hart. Then the Nation and the Hart Foundation start getting, you know, brawling together, and then, like, Michaels is, like, goading Brett, and they're just, like, standing back watching.
Because the bell rings for a while, right? And they're showing the commentary table, and they've already shown, you know, Brett going out to confront them, Nation of Domination attacking Brett and all that stuff. And, you know, there's all this, you know, brawling and chaos and whatever. And I actually wrote down at this point, I'm like, they haven't shown the match in quite a while. And then the bell just sort of rings they're still focusing on the commentary table. And I'm like, is it a countout?
What is the result?
Is it a DQ? I don't know.
I was hoping you were going to have that for me.
I don't. I actually had it written down as a question.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me find it here. I can get my notes. Hold on. Because I always have three sets of notes. Okay, Owen Hart wins by DQ.
Right.
Because the
Nation
attacked.
It would have been helpful if they showed any of the competitors in the actual match during this brawl. Because, like, there's brawling and there's chaos going on, and then the bell just rings. And so I'm like, is it a countout? Was it a DQ? I can't tell, because they didn't show Owen Hart or Kama Mustafa for quite a while. I saw Farouk attacking Brett. I saw, you know, all sorts of stuff going on by commentary. but I couldn't tell who attacked who in terms of the actual match, and the bell just rang and it was over. So I guess the official result is Owen Hart winning by DQ, but it would have been nice to actually see that or have commentary tell me what happened.
Yeah, it would have been nice to get that result because I didn't even have it either. So up next, throughout the show, they give us clips of Legion of Doom. It's actually really well done throughout the show. They give you
loads
of clips, and it's like it builds up to this huge thing that you just desperately want to win these tag team titles. And it's actually something they could implement today. You know, not even like, it doesn't even need to be a team that's been around for 20 years, but it can be, you know, if you have a team or a guy who's basically like, if I don't win this belt, I'm gone. And then you do mm-hmm. like these kind of vignettes, like it would work, you know.
Even just the thread of having them throughout the show because they're building to the big main event of LOD versus the Godwins. And thankfully, they didn't do any sort of major retrospectives on the Godwins during this show. They focused on LOD and their career and how much
there?
It mattered. Well, nothing. That's the whole point, is that there isn't anything great to show, right? But no, here it was interesting because seeing LOD talk about Paul Ellering, they had different topics throughout, right? And I was like, you know what? It occurred to me, I've never actually seen Paul Ellering with LOD. That's never something I've seen. I've heard about him, right? But I think of Paul Ellering as the guy with Authors of Pain who used to be with LOD in history that I've never seen. So seeing them actually with him and talking about how he was so integral to their career was just kind of fascinating for me because I'm like, yeah, that's a part of history I just really haven't seen at all.
I can't wait till Paul Ellering makes his WWF return in 1998 so that you have two timelines of Paul Ellering in one space. they talk about Paul Ellering and, you know, how much he meant to them as a manager. And then it cuts to the Godwins. They have an interview where they talk about, you know, they want the Legion of Doom out of the WWF. And I thought to myself, because I didn't know if you knew the result of this, because usually, like, stuff is spoiled for you. But mm-hmm. I was like, I kind of like the idea that Godwins interview was putting a little bit of fear into you that they might actually beat them.
It did.
Good.
It did. Because, again, not knowing the result, like, I thought I had an inkling that I was like, I don't think they're going to get rid of Legion of Doom, but also I don't know because there have been people like coming and going and leaving and going to WCW and, you know, all of that kind of stuff has been happening. You know, like 1 week Mr. Perfect's just gone. 1 week Jim the Anvil Neidhart is apparently under contract with another company. Like, I can't keep up with all of the ins and outs of 1997. And so I was like, I don't know if this is one of those ins and outs of 1997. And I was just really hoping it wasn't.
And I think that's you've actually hit on a really good point there. I think that's part of the kind of excitement of 1997 is that so much changes all the time that, like, you know, it's a cliche that they go, anything can happen, but, like, you never know who's going to show up. Like, you never know if a contract going to have kind of quietly, you know, went away. Like, for example, in this particular week, there was big news in WCW that Jeff Jarrett, his contract expired on October 7th, and he's through with WCW. So a lot of talk about, is he going to be WWF bound, especially with, you know, the Jesse James thing. And at this point, it was kind of like, you know, Bischoff had been doing the negotiations with Jeff Jarrett's dad, Jerry Jarrett. Jeff was wanting, I think that, like, Bischoff had offered him, like, $300,000 a year, which to me is like, I mean, for Jeff Jarrett, go for it.
Right.
But he wanted more. So, like, he was in quite, like, big storylines. So he had, like, Deborah McMichael as his manager. So she just had to go and get a new protege. So there was always kind of things where, like, people would end up just jumping or you wouldn't know what was going to happen. So, yeah, I think that's kind of one of the cool things about it is because you never really knew. Up next, though, we got a minis tag match. We got a kind of rematch from Bad Blood of Max Mini and Nova against Mosaic and Tarantula. What was good about this was at least it was better than their Bad Blood match because they knew it was actually going to happen. So
right, this was so much better than the Bad Blood match. Like, the match wasn't long, right?
It was 2 minutes and 21 seconds.
It was, I wanted more of it, actually. Like, I really did, because it was a fun little match. Like, I was like, oh, it's too short. Not because minis, but because, you know, I wanted to see more of it. And
midget jokes, good. I'm so glad, glad to see you behind rimming me. Good.
Right? Apparently, Sonny was a referee for the minis on Shotgun Saturday Night, which sounds kind of awesome. I'm not going to watch Shotgun to find out, but
you will get to see it on Raw.
I'm glad I get to see it on Raw. I was going to ask you if I ever get to see it.
This is Sonny's new thing. Sonny becomes ring announcer and referee. This is their thing of, like, how can we use Sonny?
Right, because people want to see Sunny, but obviously she's not a wrestler. She's not going to be in the matches.
What I'm curious about, though, is that she... Like, Sunny's a really good manager.
And she's great.
And I just don't know why... It still baffles me that for the majority of 1997, she's not with anyone.
Yeah, I think it is kind of baffling. I think it's something Jim Cornette said to us when we talked to him about, I want to say, was that Survivor Series last year? That when they kept putting Sunny with the tag team, she overshadowed the tag teams. And so they didn't want her getting all of the attention instead of the stars, which I can see. You know, if the stars aren't as charismatic or aren't, you know, good enough to, I guess, she was getting them cheered more because she has to be a heel manager because she's kind of a prick, right? But people are still cheering her because they want to see her. And so I can see the conundrum that they were faced with. It seems like there should have been someone that she could be put with. But, I mean, her as ring announcer and referee works. It's better than fucking Sable as a ring announcer. Fuck's sake. But yeah, I mean, this was fun and... I like that it was better than the Bad Blood match. That dive from Nova looked rough. Like, it looked like he hit his head hard.
Yeah, it did look pretty rough. I thought the dives were cool. Like, it was... I mean, the match at Bad Blood was just so bad.
Sloppy and not good.
Yeah. But this was definitely better. And the clips from Shotgun were fun.
I wish it would have been longer than 2 minutes and 30 seconds or whatever you said.
Yes, it would have been good if it was longer. Up next, though, we get to see George and Adam, who are back, pondering which WWF superstar they'd want to take out to dinner because that's what happens in the Super Survivor Series sweepstakes thing. So then...
Survivor Series Super Supper Sweepstakes.
I mean, that's impossible for me to say. I can't... I mean, I'm Scottish. I can't say that. But then, of course, it cuts to them having dinner with Sunny, and she offers them breasts, because she's Sunny.
Well, she offers them various parts of the chicken, and ends on, or a breast. Because, of course, it does. Because Sunny.
I mean, it's funny, like...
she sells sex.
In 1997, I think everyone would take breasts from Sunny. In 2017, nobody wants those breasts.
Accurate. Well, I mean, people are still paying her on Skype, so...
I really wonder about the logistics of that. Because, like, no offense, if anybody who's listened to this has Skyped Sunny, get in touch with us.
I'm actually pretty curious.
Let us know.
Like, not curious enough to do it.
No.
But
because the thing is, like, I'm just curious, like, I would imagine it's quite a creepy thing. Like, the whole experience must be quite, like, I don't know, it just feels quite weird. I mean, you're basically paying to see one of her tits. Or more, depending on what you pay for. Anyway. Sunny.
I mean, it's intriguing. But the Survivor Series Super Supper Sweepstakes is actually sort of explained for the first time here. And because George and Adam say that you can win supper with one of your favorite superstars.
Oh, no. The best thing is, though. So what it is you can win any WWF superstar of your choice to come to your town and take out you and up to 10 of your friends. And you're like, really, though? Like, are you telling me they'd be like, yeah, okay, we'll send Steve Austin to take you? I bet you any money there's, like, some sort of loophole, but it's like, you get to choose between Vader, Ahmed Johnson, Flash Funk, and... Rockabilly or Miguel Perez. And that's all the people you get.
You can't even get Savio Vega. It has to be Miguel Perez.
Yeah, it's such a shit show that you don't even get Savio. Then we get clips of Shotgun Saturday Night where Honky Tonk Man... costs Rockabilly the match that he's in, and then Jesse James comes down and basically wants to lure Rockabilly away from Jesse James.
But he's called Road Dogg this time, but with one G.
With one G. But I've got one question for you, Sandra. Willie, are you with me? I don't understand this. Why are we calling Willie?
I don't know. I don't. Who was called Willie?
Billy. Because Road Dogg is why. Because Road Dogg said, Willie, are you with me? And then Honky Tonk Man just goes, I've got a question for you. Willie, are you with me? And I'm like, so you're just asking the same question.
Yes. And then they want to know who Willie is with.
And then, I mean, Willie in the UK is not, it means something different.
No, it means penis.
It does. I was trying to I was trying not to be crass on, it's a family show.
No, it's not. But it's not at all. But no, it doesn't really make any sense. It's just, you know, they're still calling him Rockabilly, but he's Billy Gunn, but I'm not super sure what he's supposed to be called. And we were supposed to believe in this emotional turmoil of Rockabilly / Billy Gunn deciding if he was with Road Dogg with 1G or if he was with Honky Tonk Man who just inadvertently tripped him and cost him a match. And, you know, I didn't really feel like the emotional turmoil was really there. Because I don't know if I really believe that Billy Gunn and Honky Tonk Man had a deep, deep partnership. But
I mean,
you
I
know.
Think that, you know, you got to understand that Honky Tonk Man spent a lot of time trying to find his perfect protege who could shake, rattle,
I mean,
and roll.
We spent a long time watching him try to find his perfect protege who he could teach to shake, rattle, roll, play the guitar, and sing, none of which Rockabilly does.
My favorite memory of that whole thing is when Honky Tonk Man made it that Bret Hart wasn't good enough for him.
Right?
And then he picked Billy Gunn. No offense to Billy Gunn. But anyway, so now we...
I just still think it doesn't make any sense that he didn't pick Jesse James, because Jesse James actually has the characteristics. I mean, I guess he tried to pick Jesse James and Jesse James rejected him, but now Jesse James remembers that, you know, Honky Tonk Man and I had some dissensions, and now I'm going to go steal his protege and have him be my friend.
Wrestling! So yeah, so basically now, as I said at the beginning, with what happens on Shotgun the Saturday after this, and what's happened on the clip here from before that we saw, we're basically getting the beginning of the Billy Gunn and Jesse James tag team, which, from every sort of backstage account, what basically happened here is this was their last chance. Like, these two were put together as a kind of last ditch thing. Make something of this, or you're done.
Well, it stands to reason, right? Because it's not like Jesse James was lighting the world on fire. He's not even singing his entrance anymore, which I take great issue with, because, no, oh boy, do I love that song. But, I mean, Rockabilly? No one likes Rockabilly. Like, and I like Billy Gunn. I'm not down on Billy Gunn as a performer. I kind of like Billy Gunn, but Rockabilly was fucking terrible. He was worse than, you know, Smoking Gun Billy Gunn.
See,
I only saw Smoking Gun Billy Gunn a little bit.
I always liked the Smoking Guns, but, like... Yeah, I think Rockabilly was just a terrible idea. I've always thought Billy Gunn was a good wrestler. Like, he always gets quite a lot of shit, and I don't really know why. I quite like him, but, you know, that's just me. So, I mean, they definitely are on the road to now getting really interesting and becoming a really big part of the show in the next kind of six
months.
I'm
very curious to see this progress, just because I know how much everyone loved the New Age Outlaws in the 90s. And I'm curious if I'm going to love the New Age Outlaws, or if I'm... not going to love the New Age Outlaws as much as everyone else did in the 90s. And I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think you're going to like them. I don't think you're going to hate them. I feel like the New Age Outlaws, what they're there for is kind of the juvenile humor, right? And that's kind of what Road Dogg brings. And I mean, they are very charismatic together.
Like, if I had to guess, like, going in, my prediction is that I'm not going to be a big fan of the New Age Outlaws. Like, I'm not a big fan of DX right now, and I was right about that prediction. So,
I mean, a lot of people, though, I think most people feel that DX really got going and really got some good steam when it changes into being Hunter, X-Pac, and the Outlaws. That's really DX. Because they
Well, that's always the DX that you hear about. I had no idea Rick Rude was even part of DX, and I can see why, currently watching what Rick Rude did in DX. I'm not surprised that they want to sweep that under the rug a bit.
I also want to say, because I forgot to bring this up, and I was actually listening to the Something to Wrestle with Bruce Prichard podcast on Jeff Jarrett in the WWF, and... part of the reason, or the main reason really, they actually brought back Jesse James in October of 96 was that Jeff Jarrett and the Road Dogg had walked out in 1995 together, right before they were going to expose Jeff Jarrett as being the fake singer of With My Baby Tonight, and then Jeff Jarrett and the Roadie at the time were going to have a match at SummerSlam 95. Basically, you know, Roadie would have been revealed as the real singer, blah, blah, blah. But then they both walked out, and then fast forward to October 96, they thought, well, we've got this song, we've got it in the bag, we've got it done, why don't we bring in Jesse James, who's the real singer anyway? We'll expose Jarrett anyway, and Jarrett's now in WCW, so why not expose him? He's walked out on us.
Right.
And, you know, to kind of try and make some money off of the song, and even though Jesse James didn't really work, you know, he was fine for like a prelim babyface.
I mean, I will say they're still making money off the song to this day, because I did buy it, so... I spent 99 cents on With My Baby Tonight at one point on the Google Play Store, because
of course
I did. It really, really is. My whole Google Play, like, music purchase history, it's all wrestling themes. It's ridiculous.
So up next, we have And I didn't remember if this match took place or not, but the graphic of seeing Flash Funk versus Shawn Michaels was like the most jarring image I've ever seen in my life.
It is bizarre.
So Flash Funk comes out. He's got a jacket again. He's mm-hmm. got a hat. He's not got Funkettes, but he's got a jacket and a hat. So Vince has given him something. And
or he just found it in the back of his closet and was like, bring back the memories.
One of the two. And as Flash Funk is in the ring waiting for Shawn Michaels, the lights go out. Because, oh, it's Kane with Paul Bearer.
Ah!
Kane comes out and murders Flash Funk. What's interesting is, you know, Kane gets in the ring and he's just staring at Flash Funk, and Flash Funk makes the decision to try and attack him, which never is going to go down well. And
no.
Kane then...
I mean, bless Flash Funk for trying, but this will not end well.
Bless him for trying, but he... So he tombstones Flash Funk, they leave, and then Sean... runs down to the ring. Well, I mean, also Paul Bearer, sorry, gets on the mic and reminds us and The Undertaker that Kane's going to continue to destroy the WWF until Undertaker answers their challenge.
This is so good. I love this. I love the idea that Kane is just going to wreck everyone on his path to The Undertaker. I think it's such a good story. And I mean, Paul Bearer, when he says a picture is worth a thousand words, right? It totally is. I mean... Kane pile-driving Flash Funk is a different story to Kane pile-driving The Undertaker, right? But he has already done that. And so Kane beating up all of these people on a warpath to get The Undertaker to answer him until he, you know, he's like, I'm not going to stop all this destruction until I get to The Undertaker. I love that story. It's so cool. And then the line, human eye has not seen and human ear has not heard what Kane has in store for The Undertaker. I'm like, oh, I so want to see him get his hands on The Undertaker and just wreck him. I know that's probably not the reaction I'm supposed to have.
But what's interesting is this is, I think, the most interesting story The Undertaker had been involved in up to this point, because the real life emotion of it is true, because Undertaker doesn't want to fight his brother. Undertaker doesn't want to fight, because Undertaker
his
didn't.
Brother that he thought was dead, his brother that he thought was dead and scarred and burned and gone forever, the emotion of having his brother be revealed to be alive but also now want to come against him, like, that's great stuff. That is great storytelling.
So buckle up, because we're up for some great stuff in the next few months with this storyline. But then the lights come back on, DX runs out of the ring, and it did make me laugh, I've got to admit. Sean goes to pin Flash Funk, Hunter counts to three, and then Rick Rude announces Sean as the winner, and Sean literally jumps...
And China rings the bell,
and Sean celebrates like he's just won the Royal Rumble. It was gloriously prickish of him, I will give him that.
And what is Rick Rude, as he's announcing, he said, he calls him the pecan of the World Wrestling Federation. Oh, the icon of the World Wrestling Federation. And they're being ridiculous.
I always love how China looks kind of disgusted to be a part of it, but kind of like she loves being a part of it. She's great. We got another.
She's wonderful. She's my favorite part by far. Like, you have Hunter pointing to Sean's crotch, like, hey, look what I got on last night, and you know, like, Sean gyrates and crotch chops on the ramp like he's fucking the air or whatever. Like, I wouldn't want to be a part of that group either. China's just like, for fuck's sake, boys.
LOD, another moment, they talk about the WWF fans. You know, there's no better fans in the world. They talk about the big reaction they got when they won the belts at SummerSlam 91. At this point, you didn't really get a lot of, you know, showing moments from years ago, so it felt more original than now, where they always reference past stuff, so it was cool. To make Sondra and nobody else on the planet Earth happy, we had the Disciples of Apocalypse on their motorcycles.
Yes, finally, I say finally, they were gone for 1 week, but I was really upset when there were no motorcycles, so I was very glad they were back.
Against the Truth Commission. Now, obviously, we see now the Commandant is gone, the Jackal is in. We don't really get an explanation, but I want to get your thoughts here, because we get the match, and the Truth Commission is disqualified when the Jackal gets involved. Big brawl. The Truth Commission have a new guy. It's the Jackal. What are your preliminary thoughts?
Okay, first of all, I missed the Commandant, because I liked the Commandant, and I don't like that he's gone. The Jackal doesn't make any sense as the leader of the Truth Commission if they're supposed to be the South African army or whatever.
He's the Jackal.
That's all I know about him, is that he's the Jackal. They have given me no explanation of the Jackal. Have they explained the Jackal on Shotgun Saturday Night and I missed it? Or is it just like, here's the Jackal.
Listen, I'm reading you the results of Shotgun Saturday Night. I'm not going to go and watch all hours of it all the time just in case there's one passing reference of a fucking Jackal.
No, I mean, the Jackal doesn't make any sense. I don't know why he's with the Truth Commission. I mean, this is... they explain to the core better than they're explaining the Truth Commission change, right? Like, at least the core, like, formed from the, you know, cast-offs of the Nexus or whatever, and that sort of made some sense. It was terrible, but it sort of made some sense. Now it's just like, oh, here's a Jackal. I don't know why he's called the Jackal, or why he's there, or why he's talking.
What's really good about it, though, is that so Vince clearly gives no fucks about it, so he just starts talking about Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
On commentary, or Janet Reno.
Yeah, no, like, they're talking about Janet Reno and Bill Clinton possibly fucking. Like...
You got to be pop culture... relevant, Sandra.
Apparently, and Lawler also mentions Paula Jones because, of course, because they just 1997.
And you know the worst thing is, you just know that this big brawl at the end means like, oh, Survivor Series is coming up, and oh god,
I'm sure it's terrible. I'm sure it is, because apparently on Shotgun the Interrogator, I think they're trying to get over the Interrogator as this big monster, right? Because on Shotgun Saturday Night, the Interrogator went nuts and like even attacked the referee and. All this stuff. I mean, the crowd is mildly chanting for DOA at one point, so at least they still like DOA, probably because motorcycles. I didn't understand why it was a DQ at the end, though, right? Because this is one of those situations where 1997 refereeing really makes zero sense.
No, because the Jackal pulls the top rope down, which caused them Skull or 8-Ball, they're twins, it's not racist.
I don't know which is which.
Caused them to spill down to the floor, so it's a DQ.
Right, but he didn't even touch him. Like,
no, but he pulled a rope down, which meant the guy fell out the rope.
I love the fact that in 1997, someone can be blatantly hit with a weapon like a chair or kicked in the dick in full view of the referee. Full view, and the ref's like, eh, whatever, it's fine. Someone pulls a rope down, and it's like, nope, disqualification.
I like to think that the referee understood that this was terrible, and saw an out for all of us and took it. So I appreciate that.
I do actually have written down, at least it's over, I guess. Because, you know, thankfully it didn't last too long. It is kind of my dream, though. I think when I first heard the names, you know, Recon and Sniper and the Interrogator, I was like, oh, can you imagine DOA versus the Truth Commission? 8-Ball and Skull and whatever and Chains versus Recon and Sniper and the Interrogator, and I'm getting my wish, and it's as terrible as I imagined. This is not good. It's so bad. It's so bad that I do kind of enjoy it because it is that bad. An angry Interrogator is angry. Oh boy, is he angry and tall, and that is all he is. He's not good.
He is not good. This takes us into hour two, where it's finally time for Steve Austin to sign his contract to face Owen Hart. So he comes out, he wants Vince to sign it first, he doesn't trust him. Now, the thing is, like, Vince McMahon, right, is at this point 51 years old. I think he's just turned 52. So he's 52 years old, and he is clearly trying to rock the double denim look, right? With his denim jacket and his denim jeans. See, he's trying to be cool, right? He's trying to be cool. He's got a denim jacket on, it says Raw is War. Mm-hmm. He's trying to be cool. I feel like Vince's cool factor was taken completely down when his old man glasses are put on.
His old man glasses are hilarious! Oh my gosh! Like, because Vince is like, you know, you will be reinstated at Survivor Series if you sign on the dotted line, and Austin, being the smart guy that Austin is like, no, I'm not signing this first. I don't trust you as far as I can throw you. He pulls the crowd. The crowd doesn't think Austin should trust Vince either. Crowd is right. So, yeah, Vince is like, oh, fine, I'll sign first. And he does. He gets out his tiny old man glasses to read and sign the contract because he's like, well, I need to have a look at this. And, you know, Austin's like, what, don't you trust me? Don't you trust me with this contract and all this stuff? And I'm just like, okay, whatever. But yeah, Vince's old man glasses just make him look like a dork. I think they're kind of endearing, actually. Like, aww.
So he puts them on, and then Austin, so, you know, Vince signs, and then Austin tries to walk away without signing, but then he does sign it. When he goes up in the court, like, there's just a great, like, there's great little touches that Steve Austin does that makes him so great. Like, mm-hmm. he gets on the second rope and, like, puts the contract in view of the fans and signs it so they can all see it. And they go fucking nuts when he signs that, you know? Because this is him, this is going to be his first match since SummerSlam. He's coming back.
And he doesn't just sign the contract, he signs the contract with theatrics.
Which I appreciate. I really do appreciate
that. As do I.
And then he said, you know, there's one thing left to do, and everyone thinks he's going to stun Vince, and Vince's face is just like, don't you fucking dare. But Austin wants a handshake, and then he gets the handshake, but then he pulls Vince close and just reminds him how quickly he could have turned his lights out, and Vince is just raging. And then
I love when he sticks out his hand to shake Vince's hand. He goes, don't make a mess out of your pants, son.
And then, you know, Vince says, before you go, you know, we want to know what was going on at Bad Blood. You know, why did you do what you did? And then, you know, Farouk was the wrong guy at the wrong time. He doesn't have a problem with Farouk. He just wants Owen Hart because that's who, you know, it makes sense.
No, he wants Owen Hart's ass.
There's a lot of references to wanting people's ass at this point. But Austin's cool enough to pull off. I'll give him that. So he doesn't have a problem with Farouk. He just wants Owen Hart. It stands to reason Owen Hart's the guy that injured him and has his title. But here come the Nation of Domination, and Farouk cuts a promo talking about how Steve Austin is racist, and it makes no sense because Steve Austin has never really shown any core of racism at all.
No, he's talking about how Austin crossed the railroad tracks, and how you did something, 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 like, and you stepped over to our side, and he calls him racist, and he goes, what you did was sacrifice your ass to me and the nation. Like, everyone is super concerned with asses in this promo segment.
But, you know, Austin challenges any of them to a fight, and then the Nation of Domination send down the, Rocky Maivia. Rocky Maivia comes in, gets his, the first stunner from Austin to The Rock, which is, like, funny because if you were watching this at the time, like, you would never have thought, oh, in 3 years, these guys are going to headline the biggest WrestleMania of all time together.
Right.
You would have thought it. Never.
Would you think that? I did like that Austin said to Farouk, I didn't understand a word you just said.
But the crowd just go nuts. They just love Austin. Anything he does is pretty much going to get a reaction. And he's just got, like, such a presence about him. So even when he stunners Rocky Maivia, you're just like, yes! It's really good. So,
and they wanted to see Rocky get stunned. Like, I mean, it's very interesting watching it, knowing what they become, because he seems like, oh, okay, well, you just stunned one of the members of the Nation of Domination. Okay, that's cool. But yeah, Austin and Rock.
We then get an LOD talking about Wembley at SummerSlam 92, which ironically was their last WWF appearance before they returned on Raw earlier this year. In February. SummerSlam 92.
Oh, was it really?
SummerSlam 92 was the last appearance because right after SummerSlam, Hawk went MIA and was fired, and Animal was kind of in his own free will, and they didn't really know what to do with Animal because I think he did some house show matches with him and Crush teaming up together when Crush was Kona Crush.
That sounds horrendous.
I mean, I would have kind of loved it, but that's just me. Then we have, I mean, let me just take a drink here because I don't know how I can fucking communicate this properly.
I mean, it is, I'm just saying, Sable's super secret mission is her greatest achievement. I've been saying this every week, and I'm just more and more convinced that it's true.
So let me just talk
this
through,
is incredible.
Let me talk through everybody what happens, and I'm gonna throw over to Sondra here to try and explain this. So WWF, I think he's a Hall of Famer at this point, Arnold Skoland, famous for, you know, throwing Bob Backlund's towel in 1983 against Iron Sheik and stuff, you know, very, very accomplished wrestler. You still see his wife Betty Skoll in the front row of the Hall of Fame, and Cena always hugs her and stuff. Anyway, he's apparently the chief, and Sable is badly emoting that her mission is complete, but then Arnold Skoland isn't Arnold Skoland, and he takes his mask off. So Sable's like, and it's classy Freddie Blassie, and Sable's like, Freddie Blassie? And he's like, no, I'm evil Dr. Madman. At this point in my notes I have, what the fuck is this?
This is the best.
Then,
is what it is.
Then Sable beats his goons up, so he then unfreezes Max Mini, who apparently was frozen, and then Sable asks what happened, and Max says, in Spanish, with subtitles, the scriptwriters couldn't come up with a funny ending, so they cut my part short.
First of all, he didn't say it in Spanish.
Did he not?
Said it in noises.
Okay, but the noises were subtitled. Listen, like any victim of trauma, I've tried to erase this from my memory. I've just got notes here. Explain this fucking thing.
This is incredible, okay? So Sable comes in. I mean, Kenny explains this with, you know, you're just going through events. You're not fully grasping the emotion of Sable's super secret mission here, right? So she
Sable
comes
and
in.
Emotion. You're trying to get me to put those two together.
Okay, yeah, no, she can't do that, obviously. That's why the sunglasses and why all of the shenanigans around her. But no, so she's all pleased with herself, right? She's like, mission complete, chief. And So then
she completed the challenge.
She completed. You know what? Sable and Terry together. Can you just imagine them being a team and cutting a promo? Does that ever happen? Because it would be so bad.
I don't think it does. I mean, Terry does team up with some other women who have no charisma, but not Sable. But they are terrible.
Mission complete, Chief. And he's like, but I'm not the Chief. Ha 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 ha. And it was a clever disguise. And I didn't recognize Arnold Skolin, so I apologize. I didn't know who it was. But you know, he takes off his face, and it's eye patch Classy Freddy Blassie. And she goes, Classy Freddy Blassie. No, Toots. Read the script. I'm the evil Dr. Madman, and you have one more challenge to pass. And all the guys at the table in this boardroom are like, haha, we've got her now, because she's sitting at the head of this table, right? And they're all like pointing their laser guns at her, but then she has a super strike, whatever that is. I don't know. I don't have this game. I never bought it in 1997, but she goes, super strike. You're all out. And so then Classy Freddy Blassie, oh, excuse me, evil Dr. Madman, it's like, no, no, I have one more thing in my arsenal. This is amazing. And there's this vault, and it opens with a whoosh and dry ice, and out comes Max Mini, and it's the best thing ever. And I was like, Max Mini is involved in Sable's super secret mission. This is the best thing ever in my entire life. Not really, but like, it was really great. And so I was so excited to see Max Mini. And then she's like, you know, what's going on? What's going on? And then, yeah. There are like subtitled noises, which I don't know if they actually tried to have him say words or if it was just noises. It just sounded like chatter to me.
Was he maybe muffled under the mask and that's why you couldn't hear him?
But it was sped up because it sounded really high pitched, like chipmunk noises.
He's a
magic
though, so, you know.
Which is, I think, supposed to be the gag, is that he's like, because it sounded just like, it sounded like an Ewok. And so, no, he did.
I'm not having a go at you. I'm just, this, anyway, continue.
But he sounded like an Ewok and was like, and, you know, it said the producers couldn't come up with a funny ending, so they cut my part short. And then, you know, at the end, it's like, da-da-da, laser tag, Sable not included. I was like, it doesn't really make me want to buy the game anymore, but I love these segments. They make no sense, but they bring joy to my life.
I love that Freddy Blassie calls Sable Toots. It's my favorite thing. Read the script, Toots. Because the thing is, in the UK, we never got this stuff. This stuff was not on our version of Raw. Because obviously,
I mean,
this
that's
is
really a shame. I think that's a tragedy.
But all this, because all this stuff is American advertising, right? Milton Bradley Karate Fighters or laser tag. I mean, because we had a thing in like 1993 where all of like the Sky WWF stuff was sponsored by the board game Atmosphere.
Okay.
I don't know if that game came out in the States or not, but
doesn't sound familiar, but I don't know. I'm just saying, I mean, that would be like watching SmackDown nowadays and not getting the fashion files.
That's very true.
Regardless of whether you have the game to purchase or not, I mean, you shouldn't, because you didn't get the Karate Fighters tournament either then, did you?
No.
That's upsetting. Because, I mean, you would have gotten the finals, obviously, because that happened on Raw, but not getting the Karate Fighters tournament? Like, that's just... You guys were deprived.
That's one way to look at it. We come back to wrestling, sadly. LOD are talking about their origins, talking about the name, the look, and then they do this promo where they basically say, like, we're not here to rest in our laurels like Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage living in yesteryear. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Okay. We're just going...
Shots fired.
We're just going straight into this kind of stuff. Which is, you know, this is, they've not really referenced WCW very much, but now they just flat out do it every week.
They really do. And the thing with this interview, too, is that they're not shouting at all. So I was a little disappointed, but I kind of understand because it's the gravity of the situation, right? Animal says, you know, they find out if they have the fire and desire to be the champion. And it feels very serious. Even Hawk is like, we find out tonight if we're the king of the hill or if we're over the hill. And he sounds so serious. And I was like, why are you yelling this at me? You don't, that's not my Hawk. What are you doing? But I guess it was just to show that they're really serious about this. And this is their last ditch effort. And this is their last shot. So it works in terms of wanting to bring emotion and gravity to the situation. But I do miss the yelling because that's kind of my favorite part of LOD.
Which is fair. So up next we have Baby Tajiri. It's funny because they actually show a double page spread from the WWF magazine called Light Heavyweight Lightning, which was written by Keith Elliott Greenberg, which is interesting.
Oh, that's cool.
So they're hyping that Cornette's going to be doing a promo on Phil Mushnick, which we'll get to in a second, and then
which I thought they said Bill. I was like, who the fuck is this guy? I mean, I found out a little bit later, but
But Phil Mushnick, so at one point, I think it's J.R. Lawler says, so Vince, what do you think of Phil Mushnick? And he's like, well, I think he's a miserable son of a bitch. And you're like, okay, Vince does not like this guy. Ooh. So we had Tajiri versus Brian Christopher. I really enjoyed this match. That was really fun. Tajiri was really... I actually think Brian Christopher on second watch is a really good heel. Like, I really like him.
He is, actually. He's like if Enzo Amore could wrestle.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just like, he totally gets his character. He totally gets who he's supposed to be. And like I was talking to my friend Jamie, like, we remember when we were watching this originally, we used to hate his fucking laugh. Cause it's just so annoying.
Oh, it's so irritating. It's so annoying. Like, everything about him is annoying. And you just want to see him get beat. But I kind of want to see him get beat, right? Like, when Brian Christopher came out, and he's doing all these martial arts hand gestures, mocking Tajiri, you know, because racism. And, like, I was just like, oh, Tajiri, kick his face in, you know? Like, that's all I want. And obviously that didn't happen. Brian Christopher wins the match by grabbing the tights on a roll-up and cheating. But it's like, I Brian Christopher makes me so angry, but in the proper way. Like, I think he's actually kind of a useful part of the show, which is not something I want to admit, but he's a really good heel.
He is. I really enjoyed this match. So the whole thing with Phil Mushnick that we should talk about is Phil Mushnick, I don't know if he still is. I'm not very good with... American sort of like newspaper writers or whatever, but anyway, Phil Mushnick is a writer for, I think it's one of the big newspapers in the States, and he would always kind of be negative on wrestling, and Phil Mushnick wrote a piece where he pointed out about like the death of Brian Pillman, and how, you know, if this had been another sport, it would have been page one news, there'd be investigations because of the frequency of deaths of wrestlers. He called Brian Pillman an admitted steroid user. And so basically the WWF wanted to kind of come back at him for this, which is why we get the Jim Cornette promo. Mushnick had written a few columns lately around this time that were mainly kind of anti-WCW stuff. He criticized the management of Madison Square Garden because they fired somebody, I don't know who this person is, but there's a guy called Marv Albert, and Madison Square Garden fired Marv Albert for a sex crime but didn't cancel WWF shows when it was proven in court that the WWF was built on steroids. So he was like going for them, like a lot, you know, and he's bringing up like the trial with Vince and the government, and so obviously if Cornette's doing these promos, then why not do one on Phil Mushnick, who is intent on, you know, using the Pillman thing to sort of fund his agenda about wrestling and stuff. So Cornette does this promo, and he talks about Mushnick wanting wrestling off TV, mentions, you know, trying to get the WWF off Madison Square Garden Network, and using Pillman's death to fund his agenda. So I'm kind of curious, what did you think of Cornette's promo?
I thought it was good. It was just kind of confusing because I didn't know who Phil Mushnick was, really. And
It's the New York Post, sorry. I want to get that. New York Post writer, that's what he is.
Okay, so he's a New York Post writer. Obviously, not being in 1997 and not following wrestling in 1997, this isn't stuff that would have crossed my radar. It just wouldn't, right? So I think what Jim Cornette did here, I mean, obviously, Jim Cornette's great at speaking, and he talks about, you know, spearheading the steroid charges, and then he says the steroid charges, which, you know, the World Wrestling Federation was found to be completely innocent of in a court of law, and he writes columns as though they were found guilty, and he hates wrestling, and he hates wrestling fans, and, you know, he seemed to get kind of emotional when he talks about Pillman as well, because, you know, he mentions Mushnick saying, you know, guys are dropping dead, and Cornette says, you know, Pillman was a friend of mine, and it talks about how courageous he was, because he underwent so many surgeries for throat cancer and for his ankle and all this stuff. And he's like, on behalf of, you know, Pillman's family and on behalf of the wrestlers and on behalf of everyone, he says, go to hell, Phil Mushnick. And, you know, I think, and then he ends with like, I'm Jim Cornette and that's my opinion or whatever. And Vince McMahon at the end just goes, amen and amen. And you could tell this is exactly what he wanted Jim Cornette to do. I thought it was effective if you know what's going on. I thought it was just kind of out of left field and out of nowhere if you don't really know what's going on. And also it's very bizarre to see this kind of thing on Raw just because of the, you know, obviously different culture that we're in today with social media and putting out press releases constantly about stuff. Like, can you imagine this happening today? Because obviously if the WWF or if WWE now comes under allegation for something like, say, Jinder Mahal's racist promo or whatever, they put out a press statement, they put it out on Twitter, they put it out on WWE.com, and they just let it be handled off screen. And handling this kind of thing on screen is very interesting because that almost brings it into the world of wrestling and brings it into the world of the characters. And so, I mean, I don't have a problem with it, but it was a bit jarring, I'll say.
Well, I guess one of the big differences now is that they're a publicly traded company. So they have board members. So whereas here, he can just do what he wants, his company. So that's kind of why it's a bit different. I remember at the time, I mean, I would never have known who Phil Mushnick was, but I think that you can kind of piece together whatever, you know, you can kind of tell that it must be just the guy who's writing about them and writing next. So, I mean, Cornette kind of puts it over quite well. Cornette actually, in a 2014 interview with us, I was talking to him and he actually started crying on the phone about Pillman.
Yeah.
From when he found out, because they were close. So, I can only imagine that when you, because like Pillman did not die because of steroids.
No.
That's not why he died. And I think, you know, I get why wrestlers and Vince and Cornette would be troubled that Mushnick wanted to use that to fund his own agenda. Up next, we get Goldust versus Savio Vega. They explain that Goldust and Marlena were back together, but didn't renew.
You say they explain. They just say Goldust and Marlena are back together.
No, they also said that they didn't renew their vows last week out of respect for the Pillman family. So they're kind of doing this weird, like, half kayfabe, half not thing. But what was most interesting, I don't know if you picked up on this on commentary. So Vince talks about, you know, Goldust being a history buff, and then Vince just brings up No Holds Barred.
Yep. Randomly, which cracked me up because I love No Holds Barred. I think it is a beautiful atrocity.
Oh, like, it's
of my favorites.
You know, a wee American pop culture reference here. You know, remember that girl, one American Idol, Kelly Clarkson?
Mm-hmm.
She had a song called Beautiful Disaster or something like that. That's
yes.
That's what I would describe No Holds Barred as, a beautiful
it
disaster.
Is such a beautiful disaster. And yeah, like on commentary, they're just ripping into No Holds Barred, which is funny because like Vince wrote that movie.
Yeah, so Vince said that Hogan said that if it didn't make the money, Hogan would return the salary. And he was like, I guess the check's in the mail.
Yeah. And then like Vince says Hulk has another movie coming out and he's like, the only thing more painful than trying to watch the Hulkster act is trying to watch him wrestle, quite frankly.
Yep, he's just going for it. Goldust ends up...
My favorite, though, is when JR is responding to all of this. I mean, the match doesn't matter. It's Goldust versus Savio Vega. But, like, JR says he's thinking, you know, they asked JR what's on his mind or whatever. He's like, you know, I'm thinking about what brought Goldust and Marlena to the dance. I'm thinking about the three Barriquas on the outside. I wasn't thinking about No Holds Barred, quite frankly.
JR's always the voice of...
JR is the best.
JR's the voice of reason. He really is.
He really is.
So Goldust ends up getting the win because Marlena gives him the purse. The purse has got a brick in it. He hits Savio with it.
Because Marlena throws a cigar into the ring to distract the referee first so that Goldust can get her loaded purse to hit Savio Vega with the loaded purse because Goldust and Marlena are the baby faces against Savio Vega, who's the heel. What?
It's nice to see that they're back to being atrocious babyfaces.
Like, are they still supposed to be babyfaces?
Yes.
What?
Why would you think they're not?
I'm just saying that maybe throwing a cigar into the ring to distract a referee so that one of the members can cheat to win, that seems a little bit heelish to me. Just a little bit heelish.
But she's gone through a trauma. She was raped and kidnapped.
She was, and that is not okay. Like, very not okay. But also, like, why are they just back to the way everything was? And why is the way everything was them being horrendous?
I kind of give them a little bit of a pass because I don't really know how you save this. Like, if the guy dies,
you
maybe
don't.
Through the angle, like, I don't know what you really do. So, I get that they were kind of, you know, this was more about just saying, Goldust and Marlena are back together, they're a happy couple, they don't have to
But shouldn't they try to use it to get more sympathy for Marlena and try to get more sympathy for Goldust and try to, like, celebrate the fact that they're back together and have them be triumphant in ways that don't involve complete cheating against Savio Vega, who's also supposed to be a heel but doesn't come across as a heel here because he just got completely outnumbered?
I mean, I can't argue with that logic, but it's not what they did.
No.
Jim Ross plugs on the Superstar Hotline. He is going to talk about Eric Bischoff. The reason that he is bringing this up, I thought you'd be curious to know why Eric Bischoff was just suddenly brought up on Raw.
I was curious.
So what happened was, Bischoff had claimed that that JR had like asked for, called Bischoff up and asked for a job. And then Ross on the hotline claimed that he did make a few calls to Bischoff about a job a ways back, but they both had agreed to keep it confidential and off the record, and by Bischoff going public with it, he was a liar.
Interesting.
Also, what else was I going to say? Before we just continue the show, apparently at this point, Yokozuna was said to be down to £500 and due to start back on the road in November. The preliminary plan was for him to be a heel and work a program with Vader. Taka Michinoku.
I mean, that could have been kind of great, actually.
It could have been good.
Would have happened.
Taka Michinoku is expected to sign a contract, but WCW are also trying to get him at this point. And the reason that Bulldog missed the shows was actually just an injury that he suffered while lifting weights. So, there you go. That's just some of the notes. But we go back to the show, and we have a great promo of Steve Austin with an action figure version of himself beating up an action figure of Vince.
This is so great. And it has bone-crunching action, which I can verify is, like, not all that bone-crunching.
And but... I had that ring, and I had that Vince figure. I didn't have that Austin. Awesome. I had, like, an Austin that was in, like, his ring gear, but I can confirm that I did beat up the Vince figure with the Austin figure. And I can
also confirm. What I think is really interesting is that it is showing Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon. It's putting that in our heads. Like, was Stone Cold versus Vince...
Nope.
That was not the plan at this point, right?
No plan whatsoever. Vince actually thought, and we'll go more into it around Survivor Series time, Vince thought that he was going to look like the babyface after Montreal.
Right. So. Which is just so baffling. Like, it's so baffling to think that, you know, Stone Cold versus Vince was never supposed to even be a thing. And all of the seeds are there. Like, if you're watching the show, if you're watching the dissension they had earlier in this show, the seeds are there for that feud. And knowing where it goes, it's like, oh yeah, this makes all the sense. But it's one of those stories that all of the seeds were just kind of there by accident and they capitalized on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so many times in WWF, WWE history where they've kind of stumbled into stuff. Like, even with, I actually think that this is not a good way, but, you know, Pillman dying actually meant that, you know, they had to change the Goldust Marlena storyline, and I think the way that it ends up going is actually better than what would have happened of having Terry and Pillman be together. Mm-hmm. I just think that would have worked. And then, like, the Daniel Bryan thing, he was scheduled to face Sheamus at WrestleMania 30 in a nothing
yep.
match. But the story they told throughout the previous month, they were able to just maneuver it into this story that, if you didn't know anything behind the scenes, you would think that SummerSlam to WrestleMania was completely intentional the whole time. And
it obviously wasn't. I think that's the most recent example I can think of something that was completely unplanned that they ended up doing, right? I mean, because they've obviously had to go with unplanned courses of action since then, like when Seth Rollins got injured and all that kind of stuff, but or like when Finn Balor got injured and Kevin Owens became the Universal Champion instead. But the Daniel Bryan situation is the one where you can really go, oh, okay, yeah, the seeds of this were definitely there, and they changed course because the seeds were there and they saw an opportunity and capitalized on it. I don't think it's really happened to that magnitude since then.
Yep, it's fascinating. Up next, we've got the Patriot versus Triple H. It's the first time I think that the graphic has actually shown HHH instead of Hunter Hearst Helmsley Hunter. Hunter comes out with China and Michaels. The Patriots music hits, and then as the Patriot just is like on the top of the ramp, Rick Rude just appears behind him and then just flings coffee in his face, and that kind of takes the Patriot out. Michaels announces Hunter as the winner. Sergeant Slaughter comes down.
The winner of another hard-fought victory.
And then Sergeant Slaughter says, I don't know why this cracks me up. I don't know if you know what I'm going to say here. But he goes, "You... R.R. Rude." I'm like, why are you calling him R.R. Rude?
I didn't even notice that, but that's so funny. Slaughter's so awkward here. He looks like he sort of forgets his lines or something, and because he's like, "And your opponent will not be able to wrestle, but Triple H, you were signed to wrestle tonight, and you will wrestle tonight, and something, and he's got a volunteer to come out here, and you will wrestle here tonight, and that's in order," and he just keeps talking about how he will wrestle tonight.
Apparently, so I did forget to bring up, I can't remember if it was in Raw last week or in Bad Blood, but JR at one point just goes off on one about Slaughter, and he's like, "He's an idiot," and Vince is like, "What?" And he's like, what made him think that Steve Austin being out there for that IC title match was a good idea? What made him think that inviting Steve Austin to award the title to the winner was going to be a good idea? Which, fair play to JR, great point.
No, it's an excellent point. And here, JR actually...
Says that Slaughter's drunk with power.
He says that Slaughter is drunk with power. And that, it kind of baffled me a little bit, because JR's not supposed to be a heel commentator. Slaughter's not supposed to be a heel authority figure. Slaughter's supposed to be the good guy trying to maintain order, right? And so it's kind of out of character for JR to just be like, he's drunk with power. And even Vince is like, what? Why?
I think the point of it, because I think what Ross follows up with, he should just get rid of them. I think that was maybe JR's point of, like, he should just get these guys out of here. And we shouldn't have to put up with this. But instead, Slaughter's so intent on, like, using his power to make people pay and da-da-da-da-da. So I think that's maybe where JR was going with it. But do you know what?
It just didn't quite come across that way. It just came across as like, what?
Yeah, I mean, anytime JR's a bit sassy, I'm all for it. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
JR sass is my best. The opponent is Ahmed Johnson. Now, Sondra, this is back to a segment that's not been Inside the Ropes Retro Raw Rundown for a long time. It's another edition of What is Ahmed Wearing?
I mean, and they call it his street clothes.
I mean,
they say
what
that Ahmed is in his street clothes because he wasn't planning on wrestling here tonight. So apparently Ahmed Johnson's street clothes are these incredible, like, what do you call them, track bottoms? Like those sort of puffy pants?
They're like long johns. They don't look like they're thick enough to be, like, I'm wearing tracksuit bottoms right now. And, or like that kind of thing. And they're not, I mean, mines are a lot thicker than, like, what he was wearing. If I wore what he was wearing down any street, I mean, questions would be raised.
It's true.
About my mental faculties.
I feel like most of Ahmed Johnson's wardrobe is just absolutely baffling. I mean, remember the stripy long pants singlet thing? That one was incredible. But yeah, like, these red trousers or whatever he's wearing, I don't know what to call them.
Was it
one baffling piece,
or was it two separate pieces?
I couldn't tell. Because Ahmed does have that habit of wearing, like, trunks and then also covering his legs at the same time with just more adornments. But I don't know. It was very difficult to tell what exactly was going on with Ahmed Johnson's apparent street clothes here.
How did you feel about the return of Ahmed Johnson here? We've seen a few returns from Ahmed. I'm curious for you because you were a big fan of Ahmed Johnson.
I was.
You loved him mentally. Was now, this is like return number 3 or 4. How are you feeling now about him?
Is it only 3 or 4? I just kind of feel like when Ahmed Johnson came out, I just thought, oh boy, who's going to injure Ahmed Johnson? And then in a moment, the Nation of Domination attacked Ahmed Johnson because they just can't quit each other. And they, you know, rip off Ahmed Johnson's hand bandage and start stomping on it. Now, is this to write off Ahmed Johnson before he gets surgery then?
No. Ahmed's now
back.
Or
has he had the surgery already?
He's had his surgery. So I think he's back. So
is he... Is he really? I don't trust it. I don't trust that Ahmed Johnson is actually back.
Well, put it this way, Ahmed Johnson is part of Survivor Series.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure you can tell what the 8-man tag is going to be.
I'm pretty sure I can. But, so, I think that's just how I'm reacting to Ahmed Johnson returns now. It's like, but is he back? Or is he going to just leave again? And it bums me out because I want to hear Ahmed Johnson cut promos and I want to see him be mental and all that kind of stuff.
I actually thought that he was... I mean, I don't know how much flack. I thought Ahmed Johnson used to be good. Like, see when he would have, like, the WrestleMania, you know, 6-man tag, the Chicago Street Fight and all that? He was a badass and he would beat people up and I liked him. But now he just seems like he's had so many injuries. And every time he comes back, he seems a little bit less mobile than he did before.
He seems sloppier.
And I think that even... I was wondering how I would feel about it watching it back, and I think that it's cemented how I feel about it. I think that the heel turn was a horrendous idea. And
it just didn't make any sense.
Well, the heel turn was bad enough, but then they attack him, so he looks even worse.
Mm-hmm. And here they're attacking him again. Like, the Nation just can't stop attacking Ahmed Johnson, because they are always attacking Ahmed Johnson, which is why it makes no sense that he joined the Nation in the first place, because they were always attacking Ahmed Johnson for, like, a year. So, it's baffling. It bugs me that I'm not as into Ahmed Johnson anymore. It kind of bums me out, because I really did like Ahmed quite a bit, and... You know, of course, Sean and Triple H are on the ramp watching all of this with popcorn, and LOD and Ken Shamrock run down to fend off the Nation and help Ahmed Johnson out, and Sean and Hunter just throw food and drink around on the ramp, and the crowd's like, LOD, LOD, because LOD come out, you know, and And then Animal gets on the mic and says, they have something more to prove right here. And they call the Godwins out to the ring right now. And Ahmed Johnson is just sort of lost in the shuffle again. I mean, as a way to bring him back and reintroduce him after injury, I know it hasn't been that long since Bad Blood, but like, it just kind of seems, yeah, like it seems anticlimactic to Ahmed Johnson.
He's actually only been off TV for one episode.
Yeah, because he was on to write him off after Bad Blood. Like, they had the mm-hmm. match with him and, yeah, so, it's underwhelming, which is a bummer to me. And it also just kind of seems like, of course, the Nation would attack Ahmed again.
I mean, I do think that it's good. It's good that we're finally going to get Nation of Domination against Ahmed, LOD, and Shamrock. That'll be good. Mm-hmm. Main event time, though, the Godwins are out. So I think there's two parts to this. The match is atrocious.
It is really terrible.
However, I love the finish. I do love the kind of funness of it. Like, you know, the heel's got Animal, or like, cause, you know, Animal has to get taken away. And then you see that look where he's like, Hawk's getting beaten down. It's like, if they lose this, they have to retire. So Animal runs back down. People are going mental. And then Henry's holding Animal and Cletus comes in with the horseshoe. And of course, Animal ducks. So Henry gets it. And then Phineas tries to pile drive Animal. And then he does a very, very awkward turnaround. So Hawk does a clothesline and they win the titles.
They do. Like, when fucking whichever Godwin it was, Slop dropped Earl Hebner, I was like, no. Do not call for a disqualification. And this is, again, right, 1997 refereeing. Like, Earl Hebner actually gets Slop dropped. And this is not a disqualification because he's too busy being out on the mat to call for a disqualification or whatever. But I didn't want it to be a DQ in this sense, because if it is a DQ, then LOD don't win the titles and then they have to retire. So I did find myself getting into it just because I was like, fuck the Godwins, the LOD had better win here. It is weird to me that throughout the match, you know, I got my neck broken is the thing that the heels are saying, and the baby faces are like, yeah, we broke your neck. And that's the line on commentary, is like, Henry Godwin's really upset about getting his neck broken by LOD and da da da. It's like, yeah, that sort of should make Henry Godwin feel more sympathetic, actually. I don't know if you really want to keep bringing that up, but yeah, the spot with Animal getting thrown into the steps, I mean, it did look rough when he got thrown into the steps and the refs had to help him to the back, and like, he runs back, he's holding his arm as though it's dead, right, because he's run into the steps, his shoulder's fucked, whatever, but he gets back into the ring and it seems his arm is all better now because he's part of LOD and selling what? That doesn't exist. But you know, stupid Uncle Cletus with the horseshoe. I did laugh pretty hard when Henry got hit with the horseshoe, so that was, you know, Uncle Cletus served a purpose if it was to hit Henry Godwin in the face with a horseshoe, I suppose. But then, yeah, Hawk hitting the clothesline and Kyoto coming out to count the referee since Hebner is still down from the slop drop. LOD wins, so excited. And then for some reason, the Godwins turn on Uncle Cletus as though I care.
Yep.
I didn't care. I was just kind of like, oh, okay, well, neat. Like, I would rather celebrate with LOD than see Uncle Cletus get beat up right now. But that's fine. And then Cletus's nose gets all bloody. Like, they, like, actually bash him in the nose or something. I was like, I don't think this was worth getting color.
So, yeah, I mean, well, I mean, in today's mainframe, it's only, like, Vince gets it, and it's like, oh, we'll give the color to Cletus.
Right?
Now, I forget, Cletus only came in when they won the tag titles, right?
I think so.
So he came in a month.
It hasn't been long.
So he's gone in a month. I love the LOD won. I love the reaction for them. You know, I just love LOD. I can't explain.
They're pretty great here. So, I mean, for everyone who says that this was just a nostalgia run and the LOD were, you know, over the hill and didn't work, like, that's exactly what I thought they were going to be going into Retro Raw. I thought I was not going to be into LOD. I was like, whatever, they're just going to yell and be like, what a rush. And I'll be like, it's not. But it kind of is a rush. And I kind of like them. And they work for me. And maybe it's just, you know, my newfound love of super shouty promos, but I don't know. I really like them, and seeing them raise the tag titles was pretty cool. I was pleased for them. If I would have been in that crowd in 1997, I would have been cheering just as loud as everyone else. The crowd's hot for LOD. And so, yeah, they work. It's one of those happy surprises of Retro Raw that I'm like, no, I actually am into this tag team that everyone else loves. I see why they were charismatic.
Yeah, it's been fun. So, where is your thumb for this episode of Raw is War?
Thumbs up, I think. Like,
I always love whenever you do a thumbs up on Retro Raw, it's always like really carefully thought out. Like, even to your finish and saying the words, you're like, thumbs up? Like,
I think you never it's want to a thumbs to up. Because I didn't, like, I didn't hate it. So that's better than some weeks, right? But also, as I'm, like, I'm looking back through it, and I'm like, well, there wasn't that much to really cling to. I mean, DX are insufferable. I think it helps that I watched this in two parts. So I watched all of the end stuff, like, different to the beginning DX stuff, because like I enjoyed Tajiri versus Brian Christopher. That was fun. Like Goldust versus Savio Vega was Goldust versus Savio Vega, and it baffled me. So I don't know, like maybe more thumbs in the middle. I don't know, middle to up. At least at least LOD are the champions now, and we got Sable super secret mission, which was fun. And
it sounds like, yeah, an up from you.
It's, we'll go thumbs up, why not? I haven't done one of those in a while.
Okay, thumbs up. You did one last month.
Yeah.
Everyone that you liked last month.
I like DOA versus Truth Commission and how shit it is. I can't help myself. It's so bad.
So yeah, so thumbs up for me as well. I thought it was a good show. I think DX were insufferable, but the rest of it was pretty... I always judge my thumbs up by how easy a watch I think it is, and I thought this one was quite an easy watch. So that was what I thought.
It had a good thread, too, with all the LOD stuff. I think that's why it
Threads
was more of an easy watch, because the thread of the show kind of built anticipation for the main event, and then we got a happy payoff.
So, thank you for listening, everybody. I just want to remind everybody what we've got, obviously, coming up. You know, every Tuesday, you can get the Raw Rundown on our feed. You can get the SmackDown Summary every Wednesday. Finn Martin and I do the PowerSlam podcast that usually comes out on a Friday, sometimes Saturday, and obviously Retro Raw. You can also sign up to Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes, and there's a variety of options there where you can support us by pledging a certain amount of money every month. If you want to pledge $1, that's just kind of saying thank you, and we give you Sondra's show notes for Retro Raw, and we also give you the WrestleMania 6 review that Robert and I did, which is interesting. For $3,
my favorite Inside the Rope show of all time.
There you go. For $3 a month, you get all that, plus you get interviews that we put up. We're going to be starting to put up more interviews. We're going to be starting to put up audio versions of our YouTube interviews, so maybe you can just listen to them on the go if you don't want to spend 20-30 minutes on YouTube. Also, we have the brand specific reviews of the pay per views. So, like, we just did Hell in a Cell, which is a 2-hour show. We did a No Mercy one, which is 2 hours. Dave and I will be there next Monday with TLC, with the debut of Asuka. Then for $5 a month, you got all that. Plus, you also get the monthly retro pay-per-view rundown. So you've got the... we recently did Bad Blood. We're going to be doing 3 Patreon podcasts on the Survivor Series 1997. We're going to be doing one with James Dixon, who is coming back for a Patreon podcast, where we're going to talk about the year leading up to Montreal. Sondra and I will be talking to him, and then we'll be getting Finn Martin involved for the Survivor Series. We'll have a podcast just on the undercard, and then we'll have another one just focusing on Bret and Shawn, the day of the event, after the match, what happened, and all that kind of stuff. There's also VIP specials from everyone who pledged $50 or more. Robert and I are doing one on Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho's feud from 2008 next week. Sondra and David are doing a Fave 5 on moments to get you into wrestling. We also have other stuff on there. I can't remember what else. I think that's pretty much it for that.
Yeah, there's always some bonus podcasts that go on up there. Like, I don't know, every time we decide to do another special, like when we did the Mae Young Classic, for instance, like Kenny and I covered the Mae Young Classic. Did we put that at the $5 level?
I think we did. I think so.
Okay.
We also...
So sometimes we add even more content than we advertise, because that's a thing we do here at Inside the Ropes, because, you know, we're just gluttons for punishment, and also want to give back content to you lovely Patreon subscribers, and also the listeners.
Exactly. Then there's a $7 level where you get every week a classic episode of Inside the Ropes from 2012 with Robert and I. So you can just listen along to what we thought. It's interesting, somebody had said to me, you know, Robert and I did a Fave 5 about 5 years ago, or we were talking about Mankind and Hunter from SummerSlam 97, and I'd said I thought it was really great, and then I watched it back this year, and I still thought it was okay, but I wasn't, like, as thrilled about it. So sometimes your opinions can change as time goes on.
It's very interesting listening to some of those as I listen back to them, now watching Retro Raw, and actually seeing some of the stuff that you guys talk about when you do like your old school's cool specials or, you know, focus on a specific topic. Because back in 2012, when I listened to the podcast, I hadn't seen any of this retro stuff. And now that I'm actually seeing it and then hearing you guys talk about it, I feel like I'm in three different timelines at all times in my life right now. And it does get very confusing to the point where when I post on Patreon, I almost posting classic ITR the other day, I almost put like 1997 and then was like, wait, no, classic ITR is 2012.
That's the one. Also on the $7 level, you get the Yellow Ropes Forever, the NXT review with Sondra and I every week, plus the NXT TakeOver review. So you're going to have the TakeOver War Games review next month as well. And yeah, we're going to be adding some new stuff. More news coming about that. Also, go to insidetheropes.co.uk if you want to buy tickets. We have limited general admission tickets left for London, Manchester, Dublin and Belfast for Shawn Michaels in January, and we have limited VIP and general admission left for Kevin Nash on November 20th in London, the day after Survivor Series, and Scott Hall on December 3rd in Glasgow at St. Luke's. So three members of the Click so far. InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets, and I think that's everything. I think we have plugged enough.
I think that's pretty comprehensive. I mean, thank you to everyone who does support us on Patreon. Thank you to everyone who gets in touch with us on Twitter at SondraRuthRW, at KennyMC1985, and at Inside_the Ropes. We really do enjoy hearing from you. Let us know what you think about this Retro Raw. Let us know what you think about current stuff. If you want to talk, you know, whatever else. We're always up for hearing from you guys. Support means everything, and it means that you're listening and you like us, and you want to hear more of us talking about wrestling for some reason.
For some strange reason, you enjoy it. One of the episodes that people are raving about on Patreon at the $5 level is the ITR Kenny Trivia Extravaganza, where Mark Tucker gave Sondra alphabetized questions, some of which were very good, some of which were questionable. So you get to see how I would do, and people have said that they enjoyed that so much they want some more of that, so maybe we'll do some stuff down the line now and then. Also, people have asked about, you know, would we do, I should say this now, people have asked if we would do, like, things where, like, you can pledge money to host an episode with us. That's never going to happen. I just need to put that out there now, and it's not because we don't think that you'd be lovely, but it's because as soon as we open that, if we have 20 people, we don't have the schedule to keep that up.
It's just impossible to make happen.
But we did have a good recommendation from, oh god, I'm gonna forget his name, one of our listeners. I'm trying to quickly see if I can get his name as we talk here, but anyway, he suggested that you know, could we do something where people could call in or whatever, and then through some of the comments, what we figured out might be a good idea was maybe at some point once every couple of months we can have you guys send in an audio question, so you can we'll play you asking the question. And then we'll talk about it. So I'm open to doing that every now and then. It's a bit of an editing nightmare, so it probably won't be too often that it happens, but I am open to it. And sorry to whoever made that suggestion, and I can't quite get... Hakan... Oh, I'm gonna butcher this name. I apologize. Hakan Benley, I think is his name. He had suggested something. So, yeah, we're always open to suggestions. And we've just got to 530 patrons, the highest we've ever got. And I'm going to try and think of something that we could do if we reach 600. A wee something for people.
It does seem like a cause for celebration.
It does. It does. More so basic. I mean, at the moment, we pretty much could house two TNA house shows with our patrons.
So that's good. Ooh, burn. I mean, don't you mean Global? I mean, don't you mean Anthem? I mean, don't you mean Impact? I don't know what their actual name is right now.
Nobody does. Nobody knows. But thank you for listening, everybody. Hope you have a great week coming up, and we will be here all week with you as we normally are. And your support means a lot, so thank you very much. And to play us out, there is no other choice than the brand new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. The Godwin's Reign of Doom is over. And Sondra, I'm happy.
Oh, what a rush. I love them. I love them now. I just do.
And they ended the final tag team title reign of the Godwins.
Thank fuck.
See you next week, everybody.
Bye.